is Zaylee sitting in for Mary Charlotte. I'm here with Russ Baker, the founder and editor-in-chief of the groundbreaking news site Who What Why. He previously served as an investigative reporter, feature writer, and essayist for top media outlets worldwide. Baker authored the best-selling book Family of Secrets, which traces 50 years of previously unknown historical events that led up to and explain the troubling legacy of the Bush presidency and what has happened since in America. Russ will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore this Monday, July 1st at 6 p.m. His talk is called Can We Trust the Government, the Media, the Tech Companies? After which he will be signing Family of Secrets, which essentially sketches the background to the current debate and the boundaries of privacy and freedom. Welcome once again to Radio Cafe, Russ.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here again.
Thank you. Now, given the title of your talk, Can We Trust the Government, the Media, and the Tech Companies? Can we?
We can't, but if I may, just before that, I'd just like to express my sympathies to the family of Diego. Actually, he was the person who connected me with New Mexico.
Wonderful.
In the first place. He had read my book, Family of Secrets, and he reached out to me, asked me to come on his program via telephone, and we did several of those, and then KSFR asked me to come out for a benefit, and that's how I developed my current love affair with this state.
It is a big loss for Santa Fe.
He was a wonderful fellow. Wonderful fellow.
Well, I'm glad you're coming back. So tell us a little bit about your talk.
Essentially, one of the frustrations that I've had in my years in journalism is that I find that the way that stories are covered, we never really get to the bigger issues that are lurking like an elephant in the room. And with this surveillance story, these are always treated as sort of episodes. Let's say they kind of pop up and they're the sort of scandal du jour or du week or du month. But unfortunately, this issue of the invasion of our privacy is not a new one. It has been going on for decades. I remember back in the early 1980s when Jim Bamford started producing his mega books on the NSA and the early programs like Echelon, where it had these giant satellite dishes scattered around the world, sucking in potentially every telephone conversation. That was never really explored openly by the media or by our representatives in Congress. And so this has always been somewhat out of control. I think that the Edward Snowden affair is kind of an updating. It's sort of it's kind of funny. It's almost like the history of technology, because whereas maybe they were using satellite dishes at the time, now it's a matter of tapping fiber optic cables. They have different equipment. But I believe that these kind of things have always been going on, and that we've never really been secure and able to know that our conversations were private.
Now, Edward Snowden is the 29-year-old who worked for the National Security Administration and recently revealed that the government, through a program called PRISM, allowed itself direct and unilateral access to the communications of company servers, really without any consent. Companies like Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, basically any kind of communication we have, they no longer even needed any kind of warrant. I mean, they could just access. So is this different at all?
It may or may not be, because we don't know exactly what was going on before, and because we don't know exactly what's going on now, we only get glimpses of this. So, for example, Snowden has been parsing out documents to different media outlets, and one pertained to a program which involves domestic telephone calls, and we are told by the government that basically what they were doing was trying to identify calling patterns involving certain potential terrorism suspects, and they had no interest in anybody else, and there are all these safeguards in place, and I'm sure there are some safeguards in place. Whether they work or not is an entirely different matter. The other issue was internet communications. That was probably, in a way, kind of the sexier story, because it had all the big names, the Google and what have you, and apparently all of these places were made to cooperate. Now, that one, they say they were only interested in foreign individuals, but of course, when you're talking about their emails and their other communications, Skype, what is that? Is that telephone or is that computer? You see, there's gray areas everywhere. And so the reality is those people abroad are dealing with us, and so they are ending up scooping up our own affairs.
And these companies have claimed not to have any knowledge of a program called PRISM, which may be practically correct, right?
Yeah, I mean, all these things are compartmentalized, so they never tell these companies much of anything. They just tell them that we need access for security reasons. And it's really very similar if you go back decades and decades and decades to the FBI's program of surreptitiously opening mail. We're just seeing updated methods. But, I mean, to me, the larger issues here concern who's running the ship, what are their values, what are their goals, what are their objectives, what is the efficacy of the claimed program, the claim that is that they are keeping us safe. Are they keeping us safe? Who are they keeping us safe from? And how does this fit into the larger pattern of how you would keep us safe and indeed create a safer world?
And is there any evidence that any of this surveillance has led to anything, has offset any terrorist attack, anything like that?
No. And in fact, it's very interesting because if you study the government statements, they themselves are very, very coy about this. In recent congressional hearings, they stated that they believe that it has had a role in other words, there are all of these modifiers there. They don't say it definitively stops anything. You see, they believe it may have had some role. And actually, other people who have knowledge of these things say it didn't have any role, that every one of these very few things that they stopped was done by human intelligence, that is, by actual people who are privy to these kinds of things. But you see, if you pull the camera back a little further to look at the larger stage there, you see that none of this matters because, in fact, what we know is that there have been, in fact, very, very few terror plots since 2001. And, in fact, almost all of the ones that have been reported involved some kind of Federal Bureau of Investigation role in goosing the people who were the perpetrators. In other words, there's a new book about this, about the extent to which the FBI itself has been encouraging an army of informants everywhere to go into mosques and to kind of talk loudly about things and to kind of talk about jihad and to stir people up, get these things going. And then what the FBI does is they then are able to swoop in at the last minute and say, look what we stopped, which is true, they stopped it, but they also started it. And so, you know, let's talk about that a little bit in this country.
It just seems so nonsensical, and we think we're actually making ourselves safer. I mean, there's such immense irony in this entire proposition. And this event, the aspect of stirring things up, either directly on the ground, going into mosques, but also spying on foreigners, what kind of implications does this have internationally?
Well, I mean, it has enormous implications. At our website, whowhatwhy.org, we've been looking at things like the Boston bombing and other cases that are very, very murky and complex and have elements. In the Boston case, you have Chechnya and Russia, and there are all these implications of networks around the world and so forth. What it does is it creates a kind of a modern, postmodern Cold War, effectively. You have this situation with China. I just want to say all these things are connected. China, we hear, hacking into the United States. We're recently starting to hear the extent to which the United States has been hacking into China. You know, Russia's got its operatives. You know about those people who were arrested in Boston, those people who were undercover living very normal lives. They turn out to be Russian spies. Shocking. The exact same thing is going on over there. So all of these countries are running their operatives everywhere. There's double agents and triple agents and quadruple agents. This Boston thing, we've got a new article up on the site by Peter Dale Scott asking questions about indications that those two brothers may actually have been themselves being run by the FBI, which is very consistent, by the way, with the FBI first claiming they had no idea who they were and belatedly being forced to admit that they'd had repeated personal contacts with them. So this larger equation of terror and why we need to give up our civil liberties so that we can be safer, and then it turns out that the people we're supposed to be safe from are being, to some extent, encouraged or run by our own government, our own tax dollars. The whole thing is right out of Kafka.
Well, and as you say, that your book, Family of Secrets, sketches the background of this. I mean, there you talk a lot about all of these documents that revealed a long-time association of the Bush family with the CIA. So is this what you talk about? I mean, these connections with CIA dating back decades and decades.
Yeah, I mean, my mission with Family of Secrets and then launching Who, What, Why, which we started very slowly from 2005 forward. We were one of the first nonprofit, nonpartisan investigative news sites. Our mission is to kind of try to read books and look at the long view and try to figure out why do things happen? Because I know your previous guest was talking about positive thinking, and people always say to me, well, this is so interesting, but what can we do about it? The first thing is to get armed with accurate information. People in this country, and I mean even people who watch what they think are very thoughtful TV shows, don't really understand what's going on in Syria, why we went in there, why did we go in Libya? Was it really, as Hillary Clinton said, for humanitarian ends, or is there something else going on? And what I found over the more than quarter century I've spent in journalism, working all over the world, is that national policies are very, very simple. They are self-interest and only self-interest. Anything that is done in any way to so-called benefit human rights or women's rights or anything else, that's the window dressing. It's always about so-called national self-interest, which almost always comes down to resources. In the case of the Boston bombing, that the resources there are the tremendous untapped resources in the Caucasus region. It is the largest untapped energy reserves in the world. That is what all of these things are about. And ultimately, it's about interests in our country, wealthy interests. This is nothing new and radical to say.
Corporate interests.
Corporate
Shall we
interests
talk about corporate interests
that
here?
That want and need these resources there and in Africa and elsewhere, and that is what is driving all of these things.
And as you say, it's so hard to get kind of correct information with the media machine that we have here. I mean, what makes me so frustrated about the Snowden affair is the way he's already being cast without even kind of discussing the issue. They don't even refer to him by name. He is, quote, the leaker at this point. Even the journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian is being damned. I mean, we have NBC's David Gregory asking him if he should be charged with a crime for reporting. So what's happening here in our media environment that we don't even know which way is up?
Well, I just read a few minutes ago that the United States has been criticizing Ecuador for restrictions on its media, and I had to laugh because in the United States they don't have to do that because the whole thing is so under the thumb of the corporate world. I mean, I could tell you stories for hours about my own experiences where with Family of Secrets, I was initially invited on by low-level producers for the Today Show and, you know, Amy Goodman and everything, and they all canceled me, everybody, from soup to nuts, because there are certain things you're not supposed to talk about in
this
country.
Even Amy Goodman?
Everybody. And I guess what I'm getting at is that we don't understand, even what we think are the outlets that are vibrant. And by the way, my hat is off to KSFR. Radio is one of the last bastions. Certain of these independent, local, community-supported radio stations are the last bastion of true free speech, where you can talk about almost anything. I say almost anything, but,
right.
You know, going pretty far in allowing a real free discourse. The problem is that our media in this country is almost entirely funded either by the big corporations or by the big foundations. And all your favorite progressive, most of them are funded by foundations. And the foundations were started and are essentially run by those same corporate interests. So it's just another shade of the thing. We don't really have a vibrant conversation in this country. And there's also an effort to create a kind of a pejorative atmosphere around inquiry. They use these terms like conspiracy theory. We did a piece on whowhatwhy.org recently about that. New York Times and all these other papers here on the 50th anniversary of John F. Kennedy's death, anytime anybody wants to talk about that, they say, well, you're nuts. And so they don't need a repressive apparatus because everybody understands if you want to keep your job and you want to thrive in this industry, you know what to talk about and what not to talk about.
And those papers still haven't been, we can't release those from 50 years ago.
Well, that's right. Obama, the great, you know, liberal hope, holding back the last 50,000 documents pertaining to something, the JFK assassination, that they say was only done by a lone kook. And I'd like to know, well, if it's a lone kook, what are those documents?
Absolutely. Obama, also about the Snowden affair, has said that he encourages a vigorous public discussion of the trade-offs, quote-unquote, between national security and personal privacy. Is he going to create the opportunity for that? I mean, is there an opportunity for that?
There really isn't, and I try not to watch too many of those Sunday morning chat shows for my mental health, but I doubt there's ever a vigorous discussion. There's always, for example, you start with, everybody's trying to prove their patriotic bona fides, and so it never really gets to the kind of things you and I are talking about, which are these larger questions of whose interest is being served by any of these policies. And the fact of the matter is, any of us who've traveled, I know you've worked internationally, any of us who've traveled and care your interest in conflict zones and so forth, know that there are lovely people that we share values with all over the world, and that there are people right here in our own country who wouldn't hesitate to level their shotgun at us. So this effort to make us all prove that we are all together on everything is not conducive to getting to the bottom of these things. We've got to be able to just say we're taking a cold, hard, unromantic view of how things really work.
And who are, you refer to some of the interests of some of these, the kind of higher-ups who are developing policy like this that are supposed to protect us and maintain our safety. And who are some of these lower-level people who have to pour through all of this information? I mean, what is going to happen with all of this data that people are collecting on all of us?
It's hard to know what will happen with the data. I mean, the way that all of these things work is most people are recruited at a young age. They generally look for people who are not activists and not particularly identified as thinking for themselves. People who enjoy, want a job, find it interesting to have the power of the secret world and so forth. And then there's the threat that if you ever talk about it, you're going to go to jail for a very, very long time. And, by the way, that the Snowden case, the Bradley Manning case, what strikes me about these things, and I'm not in any way questioning the individuals themselves, but I don't know what their motivations are, but the net effect of all of these cases, WikiLeaks and everything else, is that on the positive side, it is waking some people up, but on the negative side, it is creating more opportunities for repression. There's going to be more of a clampdown. There's going to be tougher laws. There are going to be longer sentences, and I will tell you that every time they have another Snowden, it sends a chill message out where people say, I am not going to talk. I know as a journalist, I can't even talk to private citizens about their opinions because they're afraid that something's going to happen to them.
And it should be noted that Obama, there's been a chill on journalists more under Obama than any other president here. I mean,
that's right. He's been quite aggressive. But, the truth of the matter is we don't even look at who our presidents are, how they get to the top. I remember when he was running in 2008 and how excited everybody was. And it seemed to me the mass delusions, these powers that be that have run the country since Franklin Roosevelt warned us about that, about the financial interests dominating things, that he was limited in what he could do. And, of course, they're much more limited now. That why would these interests ever allow sort of random people to kind of come out of nowhere, as basically Barack Obama did, and do whatever he wants or the people want? They would never allow it. And these people are, in a sense, really kind of glorified actors. They're supposed to play a role. I think they make some decisions. But, even in Obama, he sits there with all these generals and spooks trooping in and with complex papers and telling him, here's our options. He has no idea if those are the real options or not. I mean, the whole thing, and really, if you think about it, is kind of a joke and a pretty sad one at that.
I'm speaking with Russ Baker, author of Family of Secrets. He'll be speaking this coming Monday at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 p.m. I read a recent article, the Associated Press out of London, that was basically talking about how to guard your data against the spies. And they gave a number of things. Encrypt your emails, use Tor, ditch your phone. They also said don't use your credit cards and steer clear of malicious software. Keep your data. Don't keep your data in America. Are these reasonable things, or are we just out of luck?
They're not. And honestly, I suppose we could leave our phones behind and spend all of our time up there, up on the mountain or something. But I have a feeling directional microphones would pick us up anyway. The real issue is that we have to stop doing things by ourselves to make ourselves feel safer and better, and get involved in changing the whole system. That is the only way to protect ourselves. And by the way, I just came from a conference of investigative reporters and editors, 1,100 journalists who do investigative reporting at a conference in San Antonio. I was hanging out with the Tor people. I attended all of the seminars on this stuff. And, the interesting thing is that in fact, some people say if you encrypt, you become more of a target for the NSA, and that they can crack potentially anything.
Well, people can hear much more about it this Monday at Collected Works at 6 p.m. Thank you so much, Russ Baker, for being with us. Check out his website, whowhatwhy.org.